Hi, this is Kendall Boyson, professional life and recovery coach, and you're listening to Encouragementology, the practice of instilling hope. Hi there. Thanks for joining me. On this show, we are releasing our need to overperform, overcommit, and overcriticize as we break perfectionism's power over us. Deep down, we realize being perfect at everything, every time, without fail, isn't attainable. But yet, it doesn't stop us from raising our expectations and never being satisfied with anything other than winning. Think about that. The feeling of never being satisfied with our performance, and therefore, never feeling the joy of accomplishment. That just won't do. Ready to take the sledgehammer to this unavoidable wall that is keeping us stuck in not good enough? Perfectionism. Refusal to accept any standard short of perfection. Immediately, my ears perk up when I hear the words refusal to accept. There is your wall keeping you from learning and growing. At what point in your life did you adopt this stance? The refusal to accept. In the early years when you were just getting started in life, you had all the energy and motivation, but also a serious lack of experience and growth. Certainly not the ideal recipe for drawing such a line in the sand. Refusal to accept any standard short of perfection. What then is perfect? Completely free from faults or defects, or as close to such a condition as possible. I wonder who added the "or as close to as such a condition as possible." It had to be when they figured out that perfect is impossible. So there you go. You have a safety net. When it can't be perfect, get as close as you can. But even that level of expectation can wreak havoc in your life. Nothing could be more subjective. When it can't be perfect, get as close as you can. Are you okay with admitting that it is as close as you can come to being perfect, and then be willing to stop and pat yourself on the back for a job well done? All important angles to explore, and oh, you bet we will. But first, are you a perfectionist? Do you even struggle with perfectionism? Elizabeth Scott, a wellness coach specializing in stress management, helps us answer these questions in an article she wrote for verywellmind.com called Perfectionist Traits. Do these sound familiar? The problem with perfectionism and the reason you'll want to know if you possess any of these traits is that perfectionists actually tend to achieve less and stress more than regular high achievers. Being a perfectionist makes it more challenging to meet the goal of being perfect or even of reaching a personal best. Perfectionists are a lot like high achievers, but with some key differences. The following are 10 telltale traits of perfectionists that you may be able to spot in yourself or in the people you know. So let's see. Do any of these sound familiar? All or nothing thinking. Perfectionists, like high achievers, tend to set high goals and work hard toward them. However, a high achiever can be satisfied with doing a great job and achieving excellence, or something close, even if their very high goals aren't completely met. Perfectionists will accept nothing less than perfection. Almost perfect is seen as a failure. Highly critical. Perfectionists are more critical of themselves and others than high achievers. High achievers take pride in their accomplishments and tend to be supportive of others. Perfectionists tend to spot mistakes and imperfections. They hone in on imperfections and have trouble seeing anything else. They're more judgmental and hard on themselves and on others when failure does occur. Pushed by fear. High achievers tend to be pulled towards their goals and by a desire to achieve them. They are happy with any steps made in the right direction. Perfectionists, on the other hand, tend to be pushed toward their goals by fear of not reaching them and seeing anything less than a perfectly met goal as a failure. Unrealistic standards. Unfortunately, a perfectionist's goals aren't always even reasonable. While high achievers can set their goals high, perhaps enjoying the fun of going a little further once goals are reached, perfectionists often set their initial goals out of reach. Focused on results. High achievers can enjoy the process of chasing a goal as much or more than actually reaching the goal itself. Perfectionists see the goal and nothing else. They're so concerned about meeting the goal and avoiding the dreaded failure that they can't enjoy the process of growing and striving. Depressed by unmet goals. Perfectionists are much less happy and easygoing than high achievers. While high achievers are able to bounce back fairly easily from disappointment, perfectionists tend to beat themselves up more and wallow in negative feelings when their high expectations go unmet. A fear of failure. Perfectionists are also much more afraid to fail than high achievers. Because they place so much stock in results and become so disappointed by anything less than perfection, failure becomes a very scary prospect. And since anything less than perfection is seen as a failure, perfectionists sometimes put off things until the very last minute. Procrastination. It seems paradoxical that perfectionists would be prone to procrastination, as that trait can be detrimental to productivity, but perfectionism and procrastination do tend to go hand in hand. This is because, fearing failure as they do, perfectionists will sometimes worry so much about doing something imperfectly that they become immobilized and fail to do anything at all. Defensiveness. Because a less than perfect performance is so painful and scary to perfectionists, they tend to take constructive criticism defensively. While high achievers can see criticism as valuable information to help their future performance. Low self-esteem. High achievers tend to have equally high self-esteem. Not so with perfectionists. Perfectionists tend to be very self-critical and unhappy and suffer from low self-esteem. They can also be lonely or isolated, as their critical nature and rigidity can push others away as well. This can lead to lower self-esteem. Now, don't be too quick to dismiss this idea if you don't identify with all 10. This is a chance to be real and identify some behavior that is no longer serving you. How can you get ahead if you're stuck in a web of being overly critical and tough on yourself? I don't have to tell you the number of successful people who have failed throughout their lifetime. One common thing they share among many is that they never gave up and they didn't waste time overanalyzing and scrutinizing every move. They took a risk, fueled by passion and desire, a leap of faith. When it didn't work out on the first try, they didn't spend time and emotional energy in beating themselves up. They dusted themselves off, re-engineered their approach, and tried again. With all or nothing thinking, you have one try and that's it. If the following people adopted that philosophy, we wouldn't have Disney, the light bulb among a gazillion other inventions, Harry Potter, Dr. Seuss, Microsoft, Oprah and all she does, and heck, even KFC. Persistence and certitude are the difference between success and failure. So if you want to succeed, don't be afraid to fail. So, if you've got it, what do you do about it? Obviously, if you suffer from a refusal to accept, it's not a mind shift you can make overnight. Rebecca Knight gives us some insight into how to manage your perfectionism in an article she wrote for the Harvard Business Review. Perfectionism is a double-edged sword. On one hand, it can motivate you to perform at a high level and deliver top-quality work. On the other hand, it can cause you unnecessary anxiety and slow you down. How can you harness the positives of your perfectionism while mitigating the negatives? What measures or practices can you use to keep your perfectionism in check? Should you enlist the help of others? Want to know what the experts say? A lot of perfectionist tendencies are rooted in fear and insecurity, says Matt Plummer, founder of Zarvana, the online coaching service that helps workers become more productive. Many perfectionists worry that if they let go of their meticulous and conscientious ways, it will hurt their performance and standing. And so they cling to their perfectionism even when it's counterproductive. If this describes you, take heart. Reining in your perfectionistic propensities is not as hard as it sounds. It's about rechanneling a strength of yours rather than aiming for a lower goal. Your aim is to take some of the pressure off yourself, says Alice Boyce, a former clinical psychologist and author of The Healthy Mind Toolkit and The Anxiety Toolkit. Of course, that's easier said than done. But the fact remains, if you genuinely want to be a high achiever, you're bound to do some things imperfectly. Here are some ideas of how to let go of your penchant for perfectionism. Let's take a look at the big picture. As any perfectionist will tell you, being perfect isn't easy. Your diligence takes a lot of effort, and your attention to detail is incredibly time-consuming. Of course, as a perfectionist, you'll never aim for merely adequate, nor should you. But you must also recognize the opportunity cost and time of your behavior. Ask yourself, am I using my time wisely? Am I being productive? You want to be focusing on maximizing the impact of your work. You can spend an extra 3 hours making a presentation perfect, but does that improve the impact to the client or your organization? Shift your mindset. You're going to be less perfect about some things so you can concentrate on what's important. If you're continuing to tinker on an assignment that most others would consider complete, try to recognize that just getting it done is a decent goal. There's a point of diminishing returns when it comes to sweating the small stuff and nitpicking details. Adjust your standards. Managing your perfectionism also requires you to calibrate your standards. For example, you're grinding out an important memo for your organization. Try showing your efforts to a colleague or supervisor earlier in the process. You may discover it's already good enough, and that task you thought that could take 10 hours could really only take 5. Don't be shy or embarrassed. It's your first draft, and even if you need to continue to work on it, the feedback you'll receive will help you improve. Keep in mind, too, that this memo needn't be worthy of a Pulitzer. What you're saying doesn't have to be the final word. It just has to contribute in a useful way. Create a checklist, of course, my personal favorite. The pursuit of perfection is a bit like wandering on an aimless journey. You keep walking and walking, but you're not sure that you're getting any closer to your destination. A perfectionist is always going to want to keep working on any assignment, any project, but the end result is rarely satisfying. So rather than toil in search of this amorous goal of perfection, start creating a checklist for each task. Say, for instance, you're working on an important client pitch. The perfectionist in you might fret over the font choice and sweat every semicolon, but with a checklist that reminds you to confirm you've spelled things correctly and to eliminate basic editing errors, you needn't endlessly slog. You're following a process with discrete and measurable goals. Once you've ticked off the items on your list, guess what? You're done. break the cycle of rumination. Many perfectionists have a proclivity to ruminate, repetitively mulling over a thought or problem without ever coming to a resolution. It's related to anxiety. People who ruminate tend to be less forgiving of themselves. It's unhealthy and it's unproductive. Don't confuse ruminating with problem solving. Instead, look for ways to disrupt the cycle. Identify your triggers. The first step in conquering this habit is to learn to recognize when you're ruminating. Figure out what sets you off. Make note of the situation, where you are, the time of day, and who's around. Find your consistent patterns. Then think about ways you might steer clear or control these factors. Don't trust your first reaction. If you're dwelling on a past event, like an interaction with a colleague, a friend, a family member, be cautious. You might not have an accurate read of the situation. When you ruminate, you tend to focus on only the bad things. So you can't trust what your ruminating mind is telling you. Try hard to get perspective and give yourself time and distance before taking action. You might be blowing it out of proportion. Seek a diversion. Distractions are useful. Do something that is cognitively absorbing, but that's also tedious and doesn't induce anxiety. Often spending just 10 minutes on a mundane but practical task will help you break the chain and keep you from spinning your wheels. Think positive. Ruminating often leads to an avoidance of certain tasks. There is a feeling of, if I can't do it perfectly, I won't even bother. To combat this idea, think about the success you've had. By reminding yourself of the pathways that led you to your accomplishments, you'll be able to see that you achieved meaningful outcome despite being 100% certain of the success. This helps you learn from your experiences. Get some perspective. You may find it helpful to talk to someone about your tendencies. That person could be a boss who's willing to engage with you emotionally, a friend, a sibling, a mentor, a spouse. Be honest and open. Tell this person that you're working on getting better. Say something like, I give you permission to let me know if I'm being too fussy, high maintenance, or finicky. Make it clear that you want to hear how you come across. I might get defensive, but I promise to think about what you have to say. And be sure to make good on that promise. Monitor your progress. As you're working on moderating your perfectionist tendencies, undertake a weekly review in which you reflect on your progress. Try to get some psychological distance and ask yourself, was there anything I avoided this week due to fear of making any mistakes? Were there any instances where my perfectionism was not worth it? Were there any times this week when I took action, even when I felt uncertain, and ended up moving things forward? Learn where perfectionism has a positive impact and where it does not. Remember, you're not fundamentally changing course, but rather directing your personality. Here are some principles to remember. Do, learn to recognize the point of diminishing returns when you're aiming to complete a task perfectly. Sometimes just getting it done is a worthy goal. Do, reflect on the progress. Identify examples of when you successfully moderated your perfectionist tendencies. Congrats. Do, calibrate your standards. Oftentimes, what you're writing or saying doesn't have to be the final word. It just has to contribute something useful. Don't mistake ruminating for problem solving. When your mind is twisting and turning, seeking out directions to break the cycle, that's not problem solving. Don't toil in pursuit of an amorous goal of perfection. Create a checklist that ensures you follow a process with measurable targets. And don't go it alone. Ask others, a friend, a colleague, a mentor, a family member. for a perspective and support. Now, I want to revisit the concept of refusal to accept. I guess I'm hung up on this idea because I know, and not just because I think I know, I have the experience to back up my theory, you never stop learning. Or should I say, if you give the license to do so, the willingness and openness, your brain never stops learning. And thank the good Lord for that, right? Let's all do a little visualization, shall we? You at age 21. And if you're now 21, take it back to age 15. What if that person was still in charge today, making all your life's decisions? Oh, sure, they thought they knew everything and were in total control, and no one could have told them differently. They weren't open, honest, and unopinionated. But hey, give them a break. They were green, which is a nice way of saying dumb. Okay, they were a little dumb. They needed a gentle push and some trials, just challenging enough to open their eyes and to realize they need to accept help and possibly a different perspective. Possibly from people who have already been there and done that. You learn from other people, walking through life, making mistakes, being down and getting back up. Never should you refuse to accept, whether it's ideas, a new perspective, help, support, kindness, or love. Shutting yourself off to change and accepting that you're as good as you're ever going to be is a travesty, no matter what your age or present circumstance. You have the power for real change. Breaking the power of perfectionism gives you permission to try until you just figure it out. Awareness is breaking the power. So let's dig more into the way that we think and why. Michael Schwantes shares 10 things emotionally intelligent people refuse to think as a way to expose negative thinking patterns. Pay attention to what comes out of your mouth. The language you use affects how you experience your world and how others experience you. Inevitably, things get lost in translation. If you're familiar with cognitive distortion or cognitive bias, these psychology terms teach us that there are subtle ways that our mind can convince us of something that isn't really true. These inaccurate thoughts are usually used to reinforce negative thinking or emotions, holding us back. We all do this, both consciously and unconsciously, and how we do it provides pointers on our underlying beliefs about ourselves, our peers, partners, and colleagues, and the immediate world around us. As psychiatrist and researcher David Burns explains, this could spell trouble. Which of these do you do? Here are 10 cognitive distortions. We've already talked about this one, so it bears repeating. The all or nothing thinking. Seeing things as black and white, right or wrong, with nothing in between. Essentially, I'm not perfect, then I'm a failure. Examples would be, I didn't finish writing that proposal, so it was a complete waste of my time. There's no point in playing in that golf tournament to raise money if I'm not 100% in shape. The vendor didn't show. They're completely unreliable. Number two, overgeneralization. Using words like always and never in relation to a single event or experience, such as, I'll never get that promotion. She always does that. Number three, minimizing or magnifying, also called catastrophizing. Seeing things as dramatically more or less important than they actually are, which can often create a catastrophe that follows. Examples of such inner dialogue. Because my boss publicly thanked her, she'll get the promotion, not me, even though I had a great performance review and just won a company award. I forgot that email. That means my boss won't trust me ever again. I won't get the raise and my wife will hate me. using words like should, need to, must, and ought to as motivation. You may have a tendency to use such words to motivate yourself. Then you feel guilty when you don't follow through, or you get angry and resentful when someone else follows through. Here's an example of that. I should have gotten the contract delivered last weekend. They ought to have been more considerate of my feelings on this project. They should know what upsets me. Number 5, labeling. Attaching a negative label to yourself or others following a single event. Like, I didn't stand up for my coworker. I'm such a wimp. What an idiot. He couldn't have seen that coming. Number 6, jumping to conclusions, mind reading, or fortune telling. Making negative predictions about the future without evidence of factual support. Like, I won't be able to pay my bills if I go on this vacation trip, even though there's plenty of money in the savings. No one will understand. I won't be invited back again to speak, even though they are supportive community partners. Number 7, discounting the positive. Not acknowledging the positive, saying anyone could have done it, or inciting that your positive actions, qualities, or achievements just don't count. Like, that doesn't count. Anyone could have done it. I've only cut back from smoking 40 cigarettes a day to 10. It doesn't count because I haven't fully given up. Number 8, blame and personalization. Blaming yourself when you weren't entirely responsible, or blaming other people and denying your role in the situation. Example, if only I were younger, I would have gotten that job. If only I had said that, they wouldn't have done this. If only he hadn't yelled at me, I wouldn't have been angry and shot back. Number 9, emotionally reasoning. I feel, therefore I am. Assuming that a feeling is true without digging deeper in it to see if it's accurate. Like, I feel like such an idiot, so it must be true. I feel guilty. I must have done something wrong. I feel bad for yelling at my partner. I must be really selfish and inconsiderate. Number 10, mental filtering. Allowing or dwelling on one negative detail or fact to spoil your enjoyment, happiness, hopes, etc. Example, you have a great evening and dinner at a restaurant with friends, but your chicken was undercooked and that spoiled the whole evening. Remember when we started this show, we also mentioned the plan B to perfectionism. Get it as good as you can. But can good enough really be good enough? Can you call it done and move on, knowing that you gave your best and happy with the revelation? Self-acceptance isn't just about accepting your body image and learning to love yourself. It's about accepting yourself completely, your efforts, your ideas, your dreams, your desire. I am very driven, but have never had a problem with perfectionism. I think it's because I execute ideas quickly, and I love that feeling of accomplishment so much that I'm not willing to wait until it's near perfect. Or maybe I've accepted that perfectionism is a mirage, and I'm confident in who I am and what I'm capable of. Voltaire once observed, "Don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good." In other words, instead of pushing yourself to an impossible perfect and therefore getting nowhere, accept good. Thomas Oppong wrote, "Make life easier on yourself by accepting good enough. Don't pursue perfection, pursue progress." In an article from Medium.com, perfect lets you stall, asks more questions, do more reviews, dumb it down, safe it up, and generally avoid doing anything that might fail. Truly perfect is becoming friendly with your imperfections on the way to doing something remarkable. Perfection is a pursuit of the worst in ourselves, the part that tells us that nothing we do will ever be good enough, that we should keep trying again and again and again without getting to done. In the gifts of imperfection, let go of who you think you're supposed to be and embrace who you are, Brené Brown says, perfectionism is not the same thing as striving to be your best. Perfectionism is the belief that if we live perfect, look perfect, and act perfect, we can minimize or avoid the pain or blame, judgment, and shame. It's a shield. It's a 20-ton shield that we lug around thinking it will protect us when, in fact, it's the thing that really prevents us from flight. Perfection is a moving target. It's an illusion. Done is better than perfect. The real world doesn't reward perfectionists. It rewards people who get things done. Give yourself time in your life to wonder what's possible and to make even the slightest moves in that direction. You will screw up in the process of getting anything worthwhile done, but it's okay. Don't beat yourself up for making a mistake or making a wrong choice. It will only lead to self-destructive behavior. It's okay to screw up as long as you're willing to try again. Nonconformists and originals screw up a lot, but they move on, knowing that at some point the breakthrough will happen. Elizabeth Gilbert writes in Big Magic, Creative Living Beyond Fear, no matter how many hours you spend attempting to render something flawless, somebody will always be able to find fault with it. There are people out there who will still consider Beethoven's symphonies a little bit too, you know, loud. At some point, you really just have to finish your work and release it as is. If only so that you can go on to make other things with a glad and determined heart, which is entirely the point, or at least it should be. No matter how many mistakes you make or how slow your progress, embracing good enough and sharing your work is still better than everyone else who is waiting for flawless art. Free yourself from the fear of mistakes. When you follow your own true north, you create new opportunities, have different experiences, and create a different life. Don't let the fear of making mistakes be greater than the excitement of getting things done. Screwing up does not mean you will never, ever be successful. Trying and failing is better than doing nothing. Making a mistake will not irreparably damage your credibility or reputation. Remember, being completely terrible at something is the first step to being pretty darn good at it. Heidi Grant Halverson, social psychologist, recommends the following steps to shift your mindset and free yourself from the fear of mistakes. Step number one, begin a new project by explicitly acknowledging what is difficult and unfamiliar and accepting that you will need some time to really get a handle on it. You may make some mistakes and that's okay. That's how ability works. It develops. Repeat this to yourself as often as needed. Step number two, reach out to others when you run into trouble. Too often we hide our mistakes rather than sharing them with those who could give us guidance. Mistakes don't make you look foolish, but acting like you are a born expert on everything certainly will. Step number three, try not to compare your own performance to other people's. Instead, compare your performance today to your performance last week, last month, or last year. You may make mistakes. You may not be perfect. But are you improving? That's the only question that matters. You have the power to break perfectionism's hold over you. It starts today with accepting who you are and where you are as good enough. Tomorrow, you can forge out in a new direction. If you want to share Encouragementology with a friend who needs to know they are not alone in this journey of self-discovery, you can visit encouragementology.com or anywhere you stream your content to receive this episode and all others. Follow us on Facebook for additional encouragement throughout the week. So I challenge you, let self-acceptance be the guide on your journey instead of blindly following the misleading beacon to perfection. You are good enough, and change should come from a desire to learn and grow, not to please. I know you can do it. Thank you for listening to Encouragementology with Kendall Boyson, where we find positive ways to handle some of life's challenges.
I stumbled through until the path was clear. That's when I found you, and how I wound up here.